Good morning, everyone. Welcome to AMP's 2017 half-year results. I'm Lachlan Johnston, Director of Media and Communications at AMP, and I'm joined this morning by Craig Miller, our Chief Executive Officer, and Gordon Lefebvre, our Chief Financial Officer. Craig will provide a brief summary of our announcements, and then both Craig and Gordon will take questions. Please register for questions as per the moderator's instructions, and the moderator will let you know when it's your turn. Just a small advance warning, we have some construction work occurring in a nearby building, so please forgive the background noise. And could we please request that you speak as clearly as possible when you ask your questions, and bear with us if we ask you to repeat the question. Thank you, and now over to you, Craig.
Great, thanks Lachlan, and good morning everyone, and thank you for joining us. So I'll outline the main points of today's half-year's results announcement, and then we'll go to Q&A. You'll see that we've delivered a good operating result across the business in the first 6 months of the year. I'd characterise this result as delivering what we said we would, improving performance and making good progress against our strategy. We're particularly pleased to be announcing our new reinsurance programme. That'll release approximately $500 million of capital from AMP Life, subject to regulatory approval. The new reinsurance programme is right in line with our strategy to reduce risk and release capital from our wealth protection business. The earnings in the wealth protection business will be much less volatile following this new reinsurance programme being implemented, as we've effectively insured ourselves against a large portion of potential claims. There are a number of components to the reinsurance programme that I'll touch on. You'll remember that in October last year, we announced our first reinsurance agreement with Munich Re. We've now extended this agreement, increasing our reinsurance cover from 50% to 60% on the old AMP Life Australian retail book. And we signed a new agreement with GenRe, which is owned by Berkshire Hathaway, to reinsure 60% of our remaining retail portfolio. These are the policies under the old NMLA Life book. And we've also signed a surplus cover arrangement with GenRe that will cover the excess of all retail claims above set levels for the entire retail portfolio. Our retail insurance book will effectively be covered by up to 68% with two of the most respected reinsurers in the world. So on to the figures for the first half. And at the group level, our underlying profit increased 4% to $533 million, driven by double-digit earnings growth in AMP Capital and AMP Bank, and a resilient performance in Australian wealth management. Our capital position remains strong. We have $1.9 billion surplus over our minimum regulatory requirements. We bought back $200 million of shares in an on-market share buyback in the first half. And in the second half, we'll continue to take a conservative approach on capital management, particularly as we navigate changing regulatory requirements and pursue growth opportunities in the business. We've increased our first half dividend by 4% to 14.5 cents per share, which is within our target payout range. On costs, we've delivered as expected, and we're on track to meet the target we set out earlier this year for a 3% reduction in controllable costs for the full year outside of AMP Capital. So we're meeting the targets we set out at the start of the year, building momentum behind our strategy as we transition to a high-growth, more capital-light business. Let me take you through the key points from our business units, starting with Australian Wealth Management, which is our superannuation investment platform and advice business. There's been an unusually high level of activity in the industry in the first half of this year, mainly due to changes in the contribution limits taking effect on the 1st of July, customers transitioning to lower margin accounts and consolidating their super into a single account. During this extraordinary period, there's been some margin compression, but this has been in line with where we anticipated. Nonetheless, our wealth management business delivered a steady performance, with operating earnings down just 1% to $193 million. Net cash flows rose to just over $1 billion for the half, and there were some good flows in corporate super, including a number of mandate wins. In line with our experience in 2007, when a similar contributions window was opened, customer super contributions have likely been front-loaded into the first half of the year ahead of the super changes deadline. And as such, we're expecting a more subdued period of flows until the end of the year. But we'll obviously see the benefit of growth in funds under management in the first half, which was up 3.5% to $125 billion. As I talked through at our Investor Day in May, we're looking to drive additional growth from our advice and SMSF businesses. We report this in the other revenue line. We're already making progress on this front, and that'll show up in our full-year results when we expect other revenue to increase by 10% on 2016 and then to accelerate further in 2018. In the advice business, our focus is on retaining and improving the productivity of our core licensee network, AMP Advice, AMP Financial Planning, Hillross, and Charter. And in the first half, we had a 99% retention rate for these core licensee advisor practices, and the average AUM per advisor practice in this group is up to $39 million. Moving on to AMP Capital, our investment management business, it's delivered another impressive performance with operating earnings up 11% to $92 million and assets under management increasing to $179 billion during the half. We earned strong management and performance fees during the half and continue to expand our international client base, now managing $10 billion for 252 international clients. We've seen a good uplift in external net cash flows to $2.4 billion, including good flows from domestic clients into fixed income and real assets, real estate and infrastructure. Almost 50% of AMP's capital's earnings are now coming from real assets. And so AMP Capital is transitioning from a traditional funds manager to a business with a highly capable multi-asset function serving AMP and a real asset business that's growing very rapidly. Looking forward, we have $3.5 billion in funds committed for investment. That's essentially dry powder ready to be deployed into investments that ultimately will earn fees for us. In the first half, we made $1.6 billion of similar investments, mostly in the infrastructure space. In China, our joint ventures go from strength to strength. CLAMP, China Life AMP Asset Management, is the fastest growing new funds management company in China, with now over 1 million retail investors. Its assets under management increased 70% year on year, and our pensions joint venture, China Life Pension Company, continues to grow its AUM. We're expecting to hear more in the second half about the tender process for the occupational pensions market for China's 40 million public servants. So all up, AMP Capital is performing very strongly. Turning to AMP Bank, and it's been another very strong half with operating earnings up 10%. The loan book grew by 17% year on year, well above market, driven by residential mortgages, particularly owner-occupied. And we saw a strong increase in mortgages being sold through our aligned advisor force. The market remains competitive, with increasing regulatory requirements, particularly on investor and interest-only mortgages. And for this reason, we expect to see some moderation in the lending market in the second half of the year as the industry adjusts to the new regulatory settings. We're pretty happy with the bank's performance in the first half, and we're confident that we'll deliver the growth this year to meet our strategic ambitions for the business. And on to wealth protection, our life insurance business. The significant news is obviously the reinsurance program I covered earlier, but looking at the first half's results, it's clear that the actions we took last year to stabilize the business have delivered as planned. Operating earnings are up 11%, and we also saw an improvement in experience back to zero. And our mature business performed in line with expectations, benefiting from improved experience and strong markets. We had a strong performance in New Zealand, where the business is delivering in line with our Manage for Value strategy. Operating earnings are up 5% on the strength of improved experience profits and stable profit margins. Turning to strategy, we've made good progress in delivering against our strategic objectives. We continue to expand internationally, strengthening our relationships with key partners. In wealth management, our plans to accelerate the growth in other revenue from advice and SMSF will start to bear fruit from the next half. Momentum in the bank continues. We've released capital from our insurance business, which along with New Zealand and Mature, we're managing for value. And as I've said before, we're open-minded about the best way to emerge that value from these businesses. And we've achieved what we said we would in the first half. Wealth protection has stabilised, AMP Capital and AMP Bank are maintaining good momentum. Australian wealth management performed resiliently. New Zealand's performing well, as we've come to expect. We've done well on costs and increased the dividend to 14.5 cents per share. With that, I'll go back to you, Lachlan, for Q&A.
Operator, could we have the first question?
Your first question comes from Tony Boyd from the Australian Financial Review. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Craig, I wonder if you could just possibly explain to me what's happening on the platforms. I realise you've got a good, strong net cash flow there of $1.2 billion, but if you look at cash outflows on North, they almost doubled. They've gone up in Flexible Super, they've gone up in Summit Generations iAccess, they've gone up in Flexible Lifetime. I mean, obviously, this is a net positive, but at the end of the day, but can you just explain what's going on there?
Tony. So there's a couple of things going on there. One is as our advisors talk to our customers about their requirements going forwards, it's quite clear that North is becoming the preferred platform of choice for many of our customers, and so our advisors are actively recommending to clients that they move to the North platform, which is a better proposition and more usually a better priced proposition for them. So a fair amount of the increase in the outflows, if you like, is money that's then moving straight onto the North platform. The second component is increasingly the industry is using the automation that's come as part of the stronger super regime to allow customers to consolidate their super into one superannuation provider. And clearly that has benefits to AMP for those customers who consolidate their super to AMP, but there's been an increase in the amount of money leaving as well as people have consolidated their funds into one place. Ultimately, this is one of the key objectives of the stronger super regulation, and you have to say it's a good thing for consumers that we're seeing a consolidation in the number of super accounts held across the system.
Oh, great. Look, I had another question just about the, you mentioned the pull forward effect that would affect your second half. Can you estimate, or do you have exact figures on how much was the surge in discretionary super contributions caused by the tax changes starting on the 1st of July?
Yeah, so if you have a look at our investor report, Tony, let me just bring the page up. It's page 8 of the investor report. Under Australian Wealth Management cash inflow composition, you can see that the member contributions line, which is about a third of the way down the page, has increased from $1.8 billion to nearly $3 billion. So that's the increase in discretionary contributions that we've seen year on year in the first half of the year.
Right, okay. And look, there's just one other question. The obviously, this reinsurance deal does come at some cost. And by that, I mean, I noticed in your appendices that it will crimp your margin by $30 million in the second half. Can you just explain what you had to basically give up profits to lower the cost of protection? Is that right?
That's essentially it. The $30 million reduction would be, all other things being equal, a reduction in profits in 2018. Because the treaties are only coming into force from the 1st of November, the impact on this year's profits will only be $5 million, which is just the sort of the November and December proportion of those. We obviously have $500 million extra capital available to us that's surplus to requirements. We'll be looking at opportunities to reinvest that capital to deliver a return to make up that shortfall. If we can't find opportunities to do that, then the course of action would be to switch the share buyback on, which is obviously something we've been doing in the last quarter. We'll be updating the market when we announce the results in February, because the capital won't be free, until at least the beginning of November, and B, until we've got regulatory approvals to release it.
Right, and look, last one from me. It says you're going to make a $50 million equity investment in the advice business and client registers in the second half. What's that money for?
Yep. So every year as financial advisors retire, many of them will sell their businesses on to other advisors, but some choose to sell their businesses back to AMP. Historically, we've, if you like, acted as a broker, taken on those businesses and then sold them further. We're increasing our investment into our owned advice businesses, built on the original IPAC business that we acquired as part of the AXA transaction. So we'll take those businesses in and manage them as businesses of AMP rather than our more traditional self-employed advisor model.
Right. Brilliant. The reason is that because I could see in that chart there that the typical assets under management of your in-house advisors is $40 million.
Yeah.
and the Charter Financial Planning's $29 million.
So typically, Tony, we'd buy those businesses a multiple of 3 to 4 times income. So for $50 million, you'd get, say, somewhere between $12 and $16 million of revenue. We'd obviously have some costs against those, but there's capacity within our system at the moment to absorb that. So we see it as a very viable way for us to grow our wealth management business and increasingly take a larger share of revenue from the advice part of the value chain.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony.
Thank you. Your next question comes from John Drury from The Australian. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Just two questions, if I may. Just following on from Tony's question, how much would be managed in-house now?
In terms of assets under management, I haven't got a number on that, John, but we have getting on for 200 advisors who are self-employed advisors, who are employed advisors within AMP rather than being self-employed advisors.
Right, and so how many self-employed?
Oh, that would be around about 2,700. So the vast majority at the moment are self-employed. Yeah.
But just sort of ballpark, what would be the percentage in-house? Is it like 10% or?
We'll get back to you on the numbers. I haven't got them in front of me, John.
Okay, great. The other thing, I always forget with China, you're talking about how much that's growing, but how much does AMP's earned from that?
Yeah, so the profits, both of the joint ventures are profitable at the present time, but the profits aren't significant enough to show up in AMP's numbers. And obviously with us being the minority partner in both joint ventures, we have to respect the disclosures that our partner choose to make, and that's not something that they're disclosing at the present time. But they are both profitable at present.
Yeah, but so you're really not earning much money from that right now?
No, they're very much in a growth phase, and the profitability from that business is in years to come.
Yeah. Like how many years to come, you reckon?
We've said, and we've been quite clear, that we're expecting around about $50 million of profit in those businesses by 2021.
So $50 million by 2021?
Yeah.
Yeah. How much did you put into them?
So between the two, we've invested about $250 million.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then, I mean, would you expect to increase your stake or decrease it?
We're very happy with the stakes that we have there, John. You know, these are very, very fast-growing businesses. They've got all the capital that they need to be able to deliver on that growth. But a lot of the costs that are in the businesses are costs that are being invested to continue the very strong growth rates that we're seeing.
Yeah, great. Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. Your next question comes from Andrew White with the Australian newspaper. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Just a couple of things that I wanted to check in the income statement. There's a number in there for investment contracts. It's gone up from about 650 to 2.7 billion. Just wondering if you can talk us through what that number is. Is that related to the reinsurance deals or is it something else?
I might ask Gordon, our CFO, to answer the detail on that one, Andrew.
So, Andrew, this this is in the consolidated income statement, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So this would relate to some of the entities that are consolidated in which we don't have direct interests that come through to. Our group numbers. So the way in which these consolidated income statements work, to the extent that there are controlled entities that are managed entities where the benefits flow to the investors in those funds, we report them in as consolidated income in the income statement. So it does not have anything to do with those reinsurance arrangements that you talk about. It is, in a way, something of a quirk in terms of the way in which we bring together the consolidated income statement.
Andrew, a life insurance company will report in a commingled way the performance of the underlying funds owned by the policyholders as well as the shareholder.
Right, okay.
And so you tend to get a mix of effects when you start to look at the statutory accounts, which is why we lay out in the investor report the sort of a much clearer AMP impact on the results.
Yeah. Okay. And just can you clear up? There is a lot of activity in life insurance at the moment. You would have seen Commonwealth Bank yesterday confirmed that they're fielding offers for their business, and a number of others have traded. What do you see as the long-term future for the life business? Is your intention to keep it, and do you focus more on the bulk market or retail? Where are you heading with it?
We've been very clear on our strategy for our life insurance business. Our focus has been on how do we access the global pools of capital that are much lower cost to allow us to reduce our exposure to insurance risk, and our number one focus has been on reinsurance, and you know, being able to announce a further $500 million today, that means we've released, or we will have released by November, about $1 billion of capital from our life insurance business. It also gives us more flexibility when we come to think about pricing in the market going forwards. Very much a continued focus on driving improvements in the performance from claims management, and that's been good progress during the first half of the year. But it's a challenging industry. The more public issues around the industry and some of the issues with claims management are well documented. Our focus is absolutely driving the business effectively whilst still continuing to deliver great service to our customers.
But have you had any offers, or have you considered the possibility of selling the business, and where did you?
We've talked about the fact that our life insurance business falls in the managed for value component of our portfolio of businesses. Our focus there is how do we ensure that we merge the embedded values of those businesses as quickly and as fully as we possibly can. We've said that we're open-minded to it, but we're also very clear on our strategy, which has been around reinsurance first, and we've focused on delivery of that, and today we're announcing that we've delivered just that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Alice Uribe from Fairfax Media. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, Craig. Just two questions from me, one on the advice part of the business and one on insurance. I might start with that just because we were talking about it at the moment. I'm just wondering, is this a completion of your reinsurance sort of strategy now?
Well, for the Australian retail portfolio, I think we've got a pretty comprehensive set of reinsurance in place. It's obviously a lot of work involved in getting this place, and the team are going to be focused very heavily on getting to the 1st of November. The tranche that we've announced today is a much more complex piece of reinsurance. Once we're through that, we'll look more broadly at our group insurance portfolio and possibly our New Zealand portfolio. But for the Australian retail, that's as far as we'll go.
Okay, and just yesterday, Ian Narev from CBA was saying that he says that the insurance arm from CBA is quite attractive. Do you feel, to buyers, do you feel that the AMP now is more attractive to buyers? If there were any?
We're very much focused on pursuing our strategy. I don't know that the changes that we've announced today would make any difference.
Okay. Cool. And on the advice, buying advice businesses, I'm just wondering what the pipeline looks like.
Well, typically in any one year, we would purchase anywhere between an $80 and $100 million value of advisor businesses. That's been reasonably steady over the last couple of years, and we'd expect that to continue over the next couple. Our decision will not so much be how much there is to buy, but how much we choose to sell on to other advisors' businesses.
Okay, great. And I'm just wondering why the sort of change in strategy from before. You were saying that, you know, you'd be more of a broker, and now you're actually purchasing them.
Yeah, we talked about this in some detail at our strategy day in May. We have very strong conviction that the advice part of the value chain is going to continue to grow. If you think about the industry historically, the advice part of the value chain for large players like AMP tends to have been run in a way that's been subsidized by the product part. That's not the way to run those businesses going forward. So we think we can grow our revenues in advice, which, if you like, gives us much greater degrees of freedom in terms of driving growth in the product side of the business and being much more competitive on the product side, because it doesn't have to cross-subsidize advice.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time.
Okay. Any more questions? If anyone would like to register now. Sorry, we have one more.
Your next question comes from Annie Kane from The Advisor. Please go ahead.
Hi, Craig. Just looking at AMP Bank, if we will, I've got two questions. The first shows that there's loan growth in both broker and AMP aligned advisors, but there's no figures for the sales through the broker channel. I wondered if you knew that. And secondly, in May, Sally Bruce said that the bank was sort of looking to increase the broker distribution network, and I wondered what work has been going on the past 6 months to achieve that.
Okay. So I haven't got the exact advisor split in front of me, but we can get back to you with that number.
Great.
We've been increasing our footprint, but the greatest focus has been within AMP's own advisor network, where the growth in new business in that network is up over 40% year on year. So we've been very pleased with the progress that we've made in broadening the number of advisors that are now distributing AMP Bank mortgages.
And can I just ask a follow-up, please? We're seeing a lot of sort of work around the remuneration in terms of the Sedgwick reviews and the ASIC review for the broker channel, and I wondered what AMP strategy was for remuneration of brokers specifically.
We're not expecting any change in the short term. As the industry evolves, we'd expect to play a full part in that evolution in the same way as we have done with advisor remuneration in the more traditional parts of our business.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time.
Okay, well, if there are no further questions, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Please contact our media team if you have anything further. Suffice to say, thank you and good morning.